Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we go plowing through the month of September.
Yeah.
Almost halfway through.
Mm-hmm. It's a short month.
30 days past September. Yeah, it's only 30 days.
30 days, which means a lot more catching up that hedge funds and money market, institutions and various market participants have to do, because you and I talked about it. We talked about how probability is going to probably start creeping back into the markets as soon as traders get back. We talked about the white patent leather shoes. We talked about the white pants, the people putting it away. Remember that?
And the pants.
Yeah, the getting back from
white. Yeah, we could take from my jacket. I didn't get to wear my jacket this year.
You should have worn it.
I didn't wear it once.
It's very sporty, I'm sure, on you.
Oh, it looks terrific.
But it was like a switch was flipped. The traders, I don't know if really or figuratively they get back. Nobody's actually leaves their desk these days. But in the old days, people would take off, you know, particularly the month of August, and come back after Labor Day, after the Jerry Lewis telethon, and they would be back in their seats and kind of, okay, figuring out what they're going to do for the end of the year. And you'd see a increase in volatility, an increase of volume, and that's exactly what happened with the markets, because things are not looking too good. Have you noticed?
Yeah, I did. I noticed, especially the one big whopper.
Yep. Last Friday, a comment from a Fed official sent markets really.
Yeah, just a comment.
Just a comment that was like, really? That didn't seem like a big deal.
Not even the head honcho. It's just somebody.
Yeah, it says something about maybe it's a good time to do so. Got a little hawkish. And the Dow, this is at least the excuse. The Dow was down 394 points. Then on Monday, of course, they come and clean up their mess. They're like, okay, over the weekend, who are we going to send out? They sent out another guy on Monday, actually a woman on Monday, with some comments about, well, you know, I really don't think it's time because of this and that, and we have more potential to keep stimulus actions at a very high level because inflation isn't kicking in, and move the markets up 250 points.
Yeah, that's funny.
Now, today there's no comments because we're in a blackout period. Before the Fed meeting, about a week or so before, there's a blackout period where they can't talk.
Yeah, so what happens? It drops again.
It dropped 250 points today. Pretty ugly day. So volatility is back after months of just kind of this little boring move up, a little boring move down, you know. But the question is going to be, you know, what's going to stop it from moving in one direction or the other? And I thought it was pretty interesting today that each of the times it hit the 100-day moving average, the S&P 500, it bounced right off of that. I mean, really bounced. So if you take a look, I put a chart over on DH Unplugged. You can see all the show notes and information on what we're talking about over on DH Unplugged. And sorry, we had a little issue last week with the RSS feed, which some people use for gathering our, whether it's the podcast itself, the audio file, or maybe looking at the notes. So we kind of changed a few things around. So if you're finding any issues with the RSS feed, let me know. But we fixed it. But anyway, check out this chart here.
Yeah, I was going to mention that I was looking at the heat chart, the heat map.
Mm-hmm.
And geez, there's like two stocks that are doing well.
Yeah, that's it.
The rest of them are all red.
Yeah, pretty ugly.
And would you guess the two?
Well, Apple.
Yeah.
And is it, let's see, Apple and let's think, what could be the other stock that is doing well in the, maybe the Dow Jones, not Exxon, nope. Verizon.
No.
Oh, what's the other one?
PayPal's Holdings.
Oh. Yeah, people got to spend.
I don't know what the deal is.
And they own Venmo. If you've used Venmo, that's a pretty good product. Easy to use. Really easy. It's like you're texting money to people.
I don't know anything about this.
Oh, it's great. Sign up for it, and it's quick. You sign up for this thing, you use like phone numbers to, like, if I have a Venmo account, and I link my bank to it. I don't have any money in my account. And let's say I want to send you $100 and you have a Venmo account. I click send John $100, click, and it goes right to you. And it actually gets into your account. You'll see it in your Venmo account before they even pull it from my bank. And the next day they go in and pull it from my bank. Or the opposite is true. if I say, okay, you know what, John paid me $100, I want to put it into my bank account at whatever bank I'm at, click the button, it just wipes it from my account right away, and it ends up the next day. It's not like a 3-day wait. It's great.
Huh.
So people go out and they have dinner, and they're like, you know what,
Who are they competing with this service?
Well, it's not with PayPal, because PayPal is owned by them. I guess it would be other payment services, but this is like a this is like an app. It's really easy to use. You know, it's a little bit social, where you can see what other people did. I put myself on all private. Like, I don't want people knowing who I'm paying, what I'm paying for. But you know, you can put a little note, hey, this is for dinner last night, or this is for the car, gas, or something. I don't think there's any competition for this, or any significant competition. Although Facebook now announced they're going to have some kind of payment system in their Facebook Messenger, and Google in their messaging system also has that already, a little dollar sign at the bottom.
Yeah, but you know, Google's been in and out of this business for a while. They've always got, at one point, because we collect this kind of, we need these services for the No Agenda show, this show too, for that matter. And Google's always had some gotcha, some screwy thing that would ruin, you know, you didn't want, it would say, why would I, what do I can't use this, it's no good. The Google stuff has always sucked.
No, I don't use it. I've never used it.
No, it's because you won't, if you try to use it, you'll find that it doesn't work, really.
Yeah. I mean,
it's, you got to have all kinds, it's just, I can't remember what the last time I tried using it. It was some problem.
Right.
It wouldn't, you know, take, oh, well, you have to have, it was something you always needed, you didn't have, and it was just bad product.
I don't know if Apple's going to come up with some kind of also peer-to-peer, you know, basically, I guess what, I'm reading a couple of things here. There's Square Cash. That's another one.
Yeah, it's just a function of Square.
And I don't know who the other ones are. Let's see what it says here, if there's anybody. Peer-to-peer. Venmo, Square Cash, Facebook Messenger, Google Wallet, which we
Facebook,
mentioned.
Google, so that's never
good. Yeah, Google Wallet. Hey,
Google Wallet, that's the one that's no good.
Right. And then I don't know if they say anything else. This is probably on a website. It's probably good. Snap, and something called Snapcash.
Snapcash. I know there's a thing called Popcash.
It could be the same thing, but I'm telling you, Venmo is a breeze to use.
Venmo.
Yep, Venmo. It's a real breeze. All the kids use it.
All the kids are using it. Well, I'm going to use it then if the kids are using it. They know what they're doing.
Anyway, take a look at that S&P 500 100-day chart. You see how it bounced off of that so beautifully?
Yeah, you put this on a Twitter post.
Yeah, I did. But this is kind of a little, I mean, it came right down to it and just bounced. And this is interesting because whether you want to believe in charts or not, just understand that others do.
Yeah, right. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you believe in it.
Right. If you think, these charts are just hocus pocus and it's just like pictures and all that, just remember, just forget everything else. Other people abide by some of the stuff, particularly many of the large money managers are like, okay, at the 50-day moving average, I'll buy. At the 100-day, I'll buy.
And not a few of them.
Right. A lot of them.
Yeah.
So
it's the easiest way to do it. You just, because you know everyone else is all in. It's almost like a gentleman's agreement.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So you have this thing that bounces off this little spot, and you're all in. So you, boom, you put in, and up it goes.
Yeah, I like that, a gentleman's agreement. The 50, the 100, the 150, and the 200. Just so everybody know, that's what we're buying. Just let that be known for your life.
Yeah.
So now, a couple of things that was happening. What are the other reasons why markets are acting so skittish? And one of the reasons is, that's contributing to some of this, is some of the concern over a rising interest rate environment. In fact, if you look at another chart we put on here, the 10-year Treasury yield is now eclipsing about 1.74, approximately. And this is interesting because it was just 1.45 recently. More importantly, there was an absolutely awful 30-year auction today where the bid to cover and the amount that was actually snapped up and the yield, it was terrible. It was like really low, like nobody wants this. And on top of that,
What do you think that is?
Well, people are worried about interest rates rising and being the guy playing musical chairs and being left without a chair. You know, as the last guy. Listen, this is what happened years ago in Venezuela, especially in Florida. So All these people from Venezuela came up and they bought a house. They called their brother, hey, we got a great deal here for you. You want to buy it? Sure. They buy it, make a little bit of money, and they pass it on. Then they call the cousin, hey, you want to buy this house? I got this house. It's a great deal. It's going up in value. Okay. And this went on and on and on until all of a sudden the last schmuck says, yeah, I'll buy it. And then the next thing, the market collapses. This poor schmuck has ended up holding the bag. And this is the same thing with bonds. It's like it's been good for a long time. We've been in a downtrend for
We've been waiting for the crash.
Yeah, and this is where everybody's starting to get concerned. The German Bunds are in positive yield territory for the first time in a while. They've been negative. And so you look at this treasury, it's not a big deal yet. We're still not over the level we saw, I'll say, back in early June when things started coming down again. But at this 1.74 or so level, we're starting to get into breakout territory. So maybe it is the time to start lessening duration, unloading some bonds. We saw a lot of the interest rate sensitive areas get hacked the last few days, like REITs and utilities, as an example, and many of the high yield stocks. So now, one of the important things to note, though, on all of this selling and buying and ups and downs that have gone on is that we're seeing some interesting oversold readings that are coming in. One in particular that I thought was interesting is the McClellan Oscillator that deals with the advanced decline ratios of the New York Stock Composite. And it's at a negative 193. Now, I've seen it as low as, I think, negative 250. That's when, like, hell is breaking loose. But if you track all the times that the McClellan Oscillator was, let's say, negative 175 or more, even 150.
Yeah, what's it a reflection of again?
It's a calculation looking at a trend of the advanced decliners. So it's looking at breadth of the market and how that's trending over time using a bit of a calculation. It's not that complex. But basically looks at the advanced decliners on the New York Stock Exchange, the composite, and it looks at a 5% trend and a 10% trend, or a moving average and an exponential moving average. And it calculates this, and right now, and it puts it into a ratio. And so now we're at a negative 193, meaning there's been a lot of damage done to individual stocks because it uses all the stocks in the index. And at 193 on the negative side, this is usually times that I'm going to get his report later. But Tom McClellan is probably going to be leaning towards this could be an oversold level, looking for an immediate bounce that when it does come back up, because let me just go through one more thing. The current structure of the McClellan Oscillator has been trending down below the zero line. So it's been up and down, but below the zero line. He calls that a complex structure. And as such, you're better off to fade rallies. But when you get this oversold, you may want to say, hey, you know what? Temporarily, I'm going to go long. And then we'll see how it plays. If it gets above zero, if not, I'm going to fade it back and go short again. So we're in an oversold, a significant oversold reading. Each time I've seen this in the last 6 months, markets have come back within a couple of days. The key reversal indicator, which I know you're not thrilled about, is a negative 3, not showing anything. Spearman is another indicator we've seen before, not confirming any of this. So we have some oversold readings, yet at the same time, not confirming with others. I know that was fascinating.
Well, you don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's exactly. They're not confirming, so there's a lot of head scratching going on. And then on top of what we have with the Fed next week, we have the Bank of Japan announcing a rate decision. Now, they said they plan to retain their negative interest rate program and possibly even go deeper because we see how great that's working. They're one of the worst markets this year in terms of their.
Well, they've been a bad market for, I don't know, a decade or more.
Yeah. This is interesting. They're the worst market for the year, or one of the worst, or maybe even for a year, 12 months. And the Bank of Japan is actively buying the stocks in that market. They're losing like on every end. And they're like, you know what?
Something nutty about the Japanese and their market.
It's very odd. They should just give up and just toss in the towel at this point. If they were a mutual fund, somebody would cut them.
Oh yeah, no, you'd be out of business.
Yeah, so they maybe go negative further. They want to bring down the yen. because it's obviously, you know, tracking pretty well these days on the upside, but it's just, it's a no-win situation. Now, since we last talked, by the way, I think this is something that you're going to have a lot to say about. I think you will. The big Apple event on the 7th of September happened, came and gone.
Right.
So just one point about the biggest piece of excitement from that whole event. First of all, did you watch it?
Yeah, I did.
Did Phil Schiller gain a few pounds?
Oh yeah, now that you mention it, yeah,
he did, right? He had a bit of a muffin
paunchy,
top.
He's paunchy.
Yeah. All right, that's okay. He's living the good life, you know. But
they didn't bother to tuck his shirt in, as I recall.
No, I don't think he would.
Or iron it, for that matter.
So it was very clear that the excitement and the biggest beneficiary of the Apple event was Nintendo. They announced the Super Mario Brothers will be released only for the iPhone at this point.
Yeah.
And they showed you playing the playing this, and you could use one finger to play this game, and Mario, everybody got excited. This is like, when did that even come out, that game? What year was it? In the 80s? 90?
I think 82 or 84, something like that.
So this is, you know, the excitement that we're going to recycle. This is like a Rocky movie. Right?
Yeah, but they recycled the old original characters, not the new three-dimensional ones.
Right. The Nintendo stock spikes 24% on this news.
Huh.
I'm watching this at a corner of my eye as I'm watching the event. Nintendo, it's on my screen. And I'm seeing it starting to move up a little bit. Like, you know, I'm like, this, really? And then it's up 24% by the end of the session. Because this is going to be there. Now, it turns out that Nintendo also, due to its Pokemon is the first app, or the fastest app ever to receive revenue of 500 million. They got 500 million off that app already.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
I mean, even though nobody's playing it anymore, but
I guess they
must be.
Yeah, that's what actually, in between meetings, that's what the Bank of Japan guys do.
Yeah.
They must.
Yeah, it sounds right.
So Apple announced the new iPhone 7. And 7 Plus, they skirted over, you know, they talked about all the different performance enhancements and dual cameras and, you know, all this a lot of technical things about the cameras and all. Some changes in the screen resolution. And one thing they seem to have glossed over, I don't know if you knew this, but you saw this, but it's like, yes, the camera's water resistant. All right, we're moving on. And next we're talking about, it's like, wait a minute. What do you mean water resistant? Right? They talk about the iWatch being water resistant down to 50 meters.
Yes. Yeah, it's more or less waterproof.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's going 50 meters down. Your head will crush. But the Apple phone is water resistant down to 1 meter, which means toilet drops are fine, splashes in a puddle are fine, but don't bring it in the pool or in the ocean.
Right. You don't want to drop it in the pool.
Right. So you
don't want to drop it in the pool anyway.
Well, what about the Samsungs? How do they do?
Oh, I don't know. There's some processes that are kind of expensive that you can make any phone waterproof. If you're familiar with this liquid, you can put it in.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure how well it works, but it's supposed to work pretty well.
So
every time you go to a trade show, there's an iPhone.
Oh, they have that booth? The booth.
There's an iPhone in a fish bowl.
Yeah, with bubbles.
Yeah, with bubbles. And then it's like showing a slideshow or something.
So one of the big things they really seem to focus in on, no pun intended, is the cameras and the camera capability. And really...
Yes, they really focus. You're right. Focus is the right word, too. Very good pun there.
Thank you. They painted a nice picture of their camera. No, but seriously, the ability to do close up, and because they have different zooms that are native to the camera lenses.
Yeah,
that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, you know, I was watching that one demo where they showed a bokeh. There's a guy's picture where he's wearing sunglasses, and it's blurred in the back, and the bokeh effect. Mm-hmm. And they preface it by saying that. This is a very expensive camera. This is the effect you can get. And then they go on to talk about how they're going to copy that effect using the iPhone's two lenses. And then they do the reveal at the end that that picture was actually not taken by an expensive camera, but it was taken by an iPhone.
Right, then,
and I'll tell you the truth. When I saw that picture to begin with, I said, what a cheap piece of crap expensive camera that must be. That photo's terrible.
Really?
That's what I said myself.
Yeah,
I was not impressed. It didn't look like an expensive picture to me.
Well, the audience oohed and aahed.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
look at that. Oh, yeah. Thank you. A lot of rounds of applause, you know?
I thought it was cheesy looking.
So they did remove the audio jack. That's something we talked about.
Yeah, everyone knew that.
And it's being replaced by a lightning connector. Okay. And they're also, which is something Apple hasn't done in the past, because usually what they do is they change plugs and say, screw you, you're done. This time they're putting a converter in there. They're including a converter.
A dongle.
Yeah, but that's, I got to tell you something, that's a big departure from their standard operating procedure.
Yes, I don't think Steve would have done that.
Nope. He would have said, go out and buy one on your own.
None of that, but it's also a profit center. You lose that dongle, which you will invariably do. You probably have to pay $40 for a new one.
And they'll be glad to sell it to you. Apple Watch, variety of things on there, and I don't know, so you can play games or whatever you're going to do on there. Now, there was a new product revealed, which I haven't researched this, but these AirBuds.
Whatever they're called.
Yeah, what are they called? They look like, somebody put a picture, they look like two tampon applicators putting in your ear.
Yeah, somebody made that right? point. It looked to me like jewelry, like earrings hanging off you.
So now, first of all, these things are not attached to each other. They're independent.
Right, so that means you're going to lose
it. You're going to lose it. You're going to be all day walking around looking for your earbuds. The second thing is,
a string or something together, right. You know.
The second thing is, and maybe they have, or maybe they should come up with, a way to ring your earbuds. Like either locate them, or maybe press a button on your iPhone and the things will start buzzing or ringing.
Yeah, that with a range of about 5 feet, right. I don't think that's going to be useful, but okay.
The second thing what are you going to say?
I was going to say some people were bitching at me about, geez, it's bad enough to have a Bluetooth radio in your ear. Now you got two radios, one in each side. So maybe it's just to spread out the cancer rate a little bit, so both sides of the brain have.
Oh, well, that's nice. You know, equal cancer opportunity here. But the other thing is, you know, all the expensive ear pieces that are not over the ear or on the ear, big old headphones for the most part, are soft and fitting into your eardrums that create a closed system so that you get that extra bass.
Right, and it seals.
Right,
it's got seals. A seal.
These are hard things you got to stick in your ear.
Yeah, I noticed that. There's no... whatever you want to call it, gasket.
Yeah. See, the other question I have is, did you notice that they talked about a brand new chip they developed for the earbuds?
I guess I was doing something else when they talked about that. I don't know about that.
They talked about a new chip. Now, I'm trying to, I don't have this answer. I probably could research this, but I thought you would have known.
No.
The question is it actually Bluetooth, or is it another, because you could just.
No, it was my understanding it's Bluetooth.
So it's Bluetooth that you don't have to connect. It's just, or it's at least a factory programmed connect to the AirBuds, because you don't have to do the whole like pairing thing. That's why I was wondering, is it some other kind of wireless?
I don't know that it is, but you might be right. I mean, it was like one of those little things I looked at and didn't like, and I didn't follow up to know whether it's a Bluetooth variation or. There's different ways of putting the code together so you can have it pre-connect.
Right.
So you don't have to do the searching and all the rest of it. It could just be hardwired in.
Well, I'm sure some listener has an answer for us. So just put it on our Twitter feed at The Real Dvorak or Andrew Horowitz or both, and we'll see what that is. I would think that if they came up with a better chip that is not Bluetooth, that maybe wouldn't have the degradation of sound and the volume problems that we've seen in the past.
It could be, and I'm sure it's something. It wouldn't surprise me. People could probably figure out exactly what it is by looking at the Apple patents. They patent everything.
Right.
Some guy fell down the other day, and they patented it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the word gullible is not in the dictionary.
Yeah.
Samsung. Seems the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission is urging all consumers of the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 to power them down and stop charging or using the device. And they're even making announcements on planes. If you have this device, shut it down. This is not good.
They shouldn't do that. Those things are, well, there's only, how many have blown up? Like six, seven? I don't think there's that many. Some kid had it blow up in his hand. He's got a burnt hand and some. A lot of horror stories. Some guys, you know, our SUV, there's been pictures of that blue. The phone blew up in the car and the car blew up.
Is that real? Is that real? Because somebody was telling me about that this weekend. I'm like, oh, man, I don't think so.
I've seen pictures, but it could be trumped up. The whole thing could be an Apple scam for all we know.
Oh, there you go. Apple was up nicely today. Apple, the yes, market's Apple down, was one. You know, market's down 250 and Apple's up 2.5%.
Because of. Apparently, at a couple of the, I think it was T-Mobile or one of the stores that has the Apple iPhone, they broke all records for pre-orders.
Wow.
For the 7. So that means that's, I believe, is what probably triggered the stock to continue its record-breaking pace.
One of the things that a few analysts talked about was that Apple was smart to release the phone mid-week instead of at the end of the week over the weekend, and they would be able to garner a lot more pre-sales than previous iPhone releases. I don't know how many times they've released it over the weekend.
I don't know. As you mentioned, I don't remember them ever releasing on a Friday, maybe Thursday. I don't know. It's a good question.
I guess they had a lot more running room at this point from a Tuesday. So Samsung's having trouble, and obviously this is going to lead to a very significant concern with people with a Samsung device. Probably not just the Galaxy Note, but also other Samsung devices. So that would lean back into Apple, and it would be the greatest, the greatest scam if Apple was behind some of this. You know, this it's unbelievable.
Would be. They'd have to cover. I mean, it's just speculation, obviously, because if Apple was ever shown to have done that, it would be bad news for them.
Yeah, so they'll get a $1 billion fine. Who cares?
Well, there's that. That's true.
Now, the ISM composite, this is kind of late in this discussion. We went through some of the economics earlier, but I wanted to show you this because last week we talked about the ISM manufacturing and contraction, the ISM services index falling pretty hard, the lowest level in 6 years. We put together the ISM composite chart that essentially is 30% of the ISM manufacturing number blended with 70% of the service number, which is approximately the weight of the U.S. economy between those two indices. And you can take a look at this and you can see that this is the lowest it's been in a while, of course, even lower than November of 2009. You see that it's dipping down into the contraction zone or starting to get there.
Well, yeah, because June 2009 was way down.
Yeah, that was the recession.
Right.
So I'm not suggesting we're going there, but you notice that, you know, there hasn't been this level of, you can see we peaked out in June of 2014, and ever since then it's been lower highs and kind of lower lows.
Yeah. Yeah, this is low. Yeah, you're right. This is what, November 2009, that's where, it's about there. But going in the other direction, November 2009, it was going up.
Right. So this is a bit of a concerning situation. I think this is going into...
How does the ISM blended composite work?
So I take the ISM manufacturing number and score that with 30%. And I take the ISM service index number and multiply that by 70% to get the total.
Okay.
Which is approximately what the U.S. economy is. I mean, a little bit maybe above or below. On the bottom there, it says manufacturing 30%, 70% services. But this is a reasonable thing to look at, you know, and obviously there's more weight for the services index, so it has more weight.
Is this your creation?
My creation. There is a ISM composite somewhere floating around, but this is mine. I take all credit.
Okay. Well, it doesn't look good.
No. Now, from the world of the weird, back to Japan for a moment. So, we know that the Japanese have a fixation with the animated animations, right? And the anime. Yeah. And we know that there are actually movies and books that are all anime that are porn, which I don't really understand.
Oh, they got tons of violent porn.
I don't get it. But anime porn, I don't really, it's not.
It's violent.
Is it funny to watch?
People have tried to explain this. Sociologists talk about it all the time because it's so fascinating, because the Japanese don't have a obsession with sex or anything. Or they do, it's like so repressed that this maybe helps them sublimate. Nobody knows. It's very, very mysterious, this the kind of cartoony porn. And it's cartoony. It's all cartoony.
Right.
That they just seem to like to an extreme.
Well, only in Japan do we have that, and now a new star, a concert, a live concert with a computer-generated hologram as the lead singer.
Well, didn't that hologram, it's a girl, right?
Yeah, it's a girl, and they use auto-tune software.
Has she been around for a while?
Maybe, but it's like a big hit. They're having concerts.
She's been around for a while, this girl.
Mm.
She's very pretty.
Well, one of the things they do to bring in this is kind of actually smart. What they do is they have all the, you know, followers or listen or fans, or whatever, write their own songs in this auto-tune thing, you know, which has like, you know, all this technical music going on and tech music and all that, techno. And then they say, I guess they submit it and they play those at these concerts. So I guess it's kind of like your own music is playing to a degree. And then they kind of have these holograms and these lasers and all that. Anyway, I put a video of this on the DH Unplugged site under the show notes, so you can see this for yourself. It looks a little staged. It looks a little, you know, with everybody's got these glow sticks and it's going to the beat and they're all excited. And it's like a big old rave party. I just don't
get it.
Yeah,
it's like a rave thing.
It's bad enough that current day music is all created, or a lot of it is created on a computer without a band. There's something.
Well, a lot of the music you will hear at a rave.
Yeah,
like it's very. Is much of it is generated and pumped. I don't know if you, there was a rave. I'm not talking about just your normal rave, but the big commercial raves, which are around.
We have the biggest ones in Florida. We have some big ones.
Okay, well they have. Ultra. Well, there was one that they had at the Oakland Coliseum parking lot, which they put up this giant tent, and I mean, or a series of tents. It was huge. It was the entire parking lot of the football stadium, which is a lot. It's bigger than the stadium because of the, you know, just what parking lots are. And this thing, I drove by it, and it was so loud that you could hear it apparently 10 miles away.
Wow.
Because there were complaints in Alameda about the noise. And the noise consists of boom, boom, boom.
Right,
you didn't really hear much more than the bass line. But it was extremely loud. I wonder what the liability situation is, because I would have to say people that are going to these things are going to wind up deaf as a doornail.
My right ear is still ringing from an Ozzy Osbourne concert back in the 80s. When I stood a little too close to a speaker.
Oh, you get the pain. Luckily, I was, just as an aside, when I was a kid, when we get jobs in factories for summer, I was kind of read the Riot Act about the importance of ear protection, because I was working in these noisy factories, and sometimes there'd be some loud noise. And I kind of took that with me, and I always wore some sort of protection to rock concerts.
That's smart.
And especially there was a period where I could get these. They're still around. There's a fiberglass ear protection. It's called Bilson. It comes out of Sweden, I think. And it's made out of a cotton, fiberglass cotton. And you can shove those in your ears. And there's other devices that do this. There's ones with little holes in them. There's other devices. Because the problem that you run into is you muffle the high notes when you just shove any old thing in your ear. And you use this Bilson stuff, and the fiberglass is actually transferred the sound accurately into the ear, but it attenuates it by about 60%. It's a very interesting process.
That's something I wish you would have told me about 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, you know, you didn't ask.
I'm going to be going to a rave concert, actually, or a...
No, you're not.
Yeah, I'm going out to Vegas and with my son, who's turning 21. And David Guetta is going to be there at a pool party at the Wynn. And by the way, to get in, listen to this, to get into this, which I'm probably going to stand online, it's like $60 just to enter. Okay, from 12 o'clock
to 7. $60 just to get into, and this is just a pool party.
Yeah, just a pool party. And I don't even want to know what the price of the drinks are, but I can tell you that if you'd like to buy a table, if you want to, you want to get a table with you and maybe 10 of your friends, you know, you have like a big table and $25,000. And with with a required spend of $38,000 total.
So you have to spend $38,000 and others got to buy a lot of drinks and champagne.
Yeah.
And what's the event for?
It's an afternoon pool party. Seriously. It goes on like they bring in different DJs and entertainers, and David Guetta is going to be out there, you know, one of the best DJs for these kind, you know, tech. I'm going. I'm going to see what's going on
It's going to be a complete for you. I could be wrong. But I think it's going to you're going to consider it a complete waste of money.
It may be, but it's something I have to experience.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I don't know what it's going to. We'll see what it is. It's got to be fun. I'll just bounce up and down or something.
I'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you what it is.
Yep. All right. So let's talk about. If you want to help us out, by the way, on our. On our daily grind, you can, of course, help by donating to the show. There's a very, very easy process right on the show notes, right on the top right of the site, right on the bottom of the site. You can't miss it, actually. There's a little donate button if you want to give us a couple of bucks because, you know, you just love the repartee or you like that we provide you with some good stock ideas or just help you waste time away from the family and, you know, you pretend that you're actually doing something. I don't know, whatever it is.
That'll do it.
That may be something we get a lot of donations for. You know, please, it's important. It's important because you know, we're starving actors. What else here? Okay, let's talk about the close to the pin. We have a winner. We have a winner. We had a lot of entries for this Twitter.
And yeah, the Twitter one was a rough one.
Yeah. It moved. I mean, it was all over the place. We had the average price for entry of $18.53, which was about 4%, 5% away. You were 5.67% away. You were actually low. I was about 0.61% away. I hit a clear support level that I used. Stephen G hit it on the nail. So he's the winner. He came in zero away from the actual.
Wow.
Yep, that's pretty impressive. So we're sending him a shirt, and he will be also a entry into the end of the year official DH Unplugged CTP Cup with all the winners for the monthly Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is going on right now. So you can see all that over on DH Unplugged. It's a live chart and scoring system, and you can look at all the past ones as well. Some cool charts there that you can check out as well. Really cool charts, actually. Let's leave the old codgers portfolios next week so we could kind of get a little more time in there with the new stocks. That's something you can see there too. Now, one of the things I want to grouse about, which I think you're probably in my camp here, is this whole Wells Fargo fiasco.
Oh,
this is all
beyond your camp.
Yeah. How terrible is this? I mean, This is
racketeering. Where is the Justice Department? These people should be thrown in jail.
So for those of you that don't know what's going on, and there's plenty of people, basically Wells Fargo seemed to open up accounts for people that may have been current customers or maybe people that didn't exist, about, I think, 2 million accounts or something like that. Some people just got accounts set up. Some people were set up and they were charged without their knowledge. But all the accounts were set up without people's knowledge, only done by Wells Fargo themselves.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things. First of all, this whole thing is hidden. It's behind the scenes. There's some investigation going on until the day that we hear the final outcome, which is that they are required to pay $185 million in fines, as well as payback accounts for any money that they took and misappropriately, without the person's knowledge, But what was really interesting was it wasn't just like three or four people in a corner office. We're talking about they fired 5,300 people.
Those 5,300 people should all be in jail. And their supervisors should be too. This was an institutionalized scam.
Right.
And this means it comes down from the CEO. The CEO knows about this.
Yeah.
He knew about it all the time.
Now they had.
I assume it's a male. It could be a female CEO.
He was on Kramer's show tonight. It was interesting.
Oh, was he?
It was an interesting discussion because Kramer put the screws to him a little bit and said, you know, shouldn't you have known about this? You know, shouldn't this? Aren't you a buck stops here kind of guy? And the guy was blaming everybody else. He was blaming people. He was like,
Kramer said, he's the one behind it.
Yeah, Kramer said, you know, you don't seem like the kind of guy that blames others, and you're doing a lot of it here. Now,
well, good for Kramer, finally.
But then he went softball. Then he went softball on him.
Well, of course he did.
But what's interesting is 5,300 people over a five-year period. In other words, this is what I don't understand. You're firing people. Let's say you fired a...
How is this not racketeering?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't understand any of this. How do you fire 100 people because of what went on, okay? And then maybe a year later, fire another 100 people because it's still going on. And then another 500 people in over 5 years, and you don't, somebody doesn't put the kibosh on this. And by the way, this will really get your butt in a tizzy here. The head of the division is going to be retiring this summer with a $125 million package.
Well, he should be retiring to one of the big prisons
Sing
on the
Sing.
East Coast.
Yep, Sing Sing.
Yeah, Sing Sing is the first that comes to mind. Rikers.
Yep. Now, also, the interesting thing is, like you said, nobody is obviously the CEO is not stepping down. All this is going on, only $185 million. They didn't talk about this at all until, I mean, they could have come clean with this over the years that this was going on. Today, or maybe it was yesterday, after you know, late, they said they're going to stop all cross-selling activities with their bank. And then, again, on Kramer, they talked about this. There was sales incentives programs put into all these people that were in the, I guess, sales department and various departments. They stopped that just today. In other words, they knew this was going on for years, and only until they were caught, until the deal came down, including the penalty, did they stop this. And even after that, it took them a day to then release that they're going to stop all these weird sales practices. Who knows what else is going on there?
Oh, yeah. I would suggest that some of the other banks may have similar issues.
I would agree.
I've always had trouble with the Bank of America.
So
always.
Everybody should look at their accounts and see if there's anything weird, a little fee that
there's all out. Kinds of weird stuff. You see all kinds of charges for this and that. They changed the due date so you can't make your payment on time. They even instituted they've done a number of these. In fact, Bank of America, I believe, foreclosed on people that had perfect payment records. Mm. They ran them out of Washington State because they tried to pull that stuff up there. And in fact, we were working because we had a Bank of America loan. We were working with the state attorney general personally. My wife was. And we were actually, because we had gotten some fishy stuff going on at Bank of America, and we were bitching at it to the state. We went to the state. We didn't fool around. And we were actually in a position to kind of set them up.
Mm. Little sting operation?
They got the bank.
Mm.
Because they were screwed. I mean, they were doing some really fishy stuff. And we were working with trying to work with the attorney. It's not the attorney. It's in the attorney general's office. One of the guys there. Mm. And by the time it never happened because the whole bank just bailed. They sold their banks and left the state. I think they knew something was coming. And so they got out of there. So I suspect that Wells Fargo is not the only one doing this sort of thing.
The moral to the story is no matter how badly the banks rip you off in some way or another, crush the financial system, then get money to come back, no matter what, banks will look to cheat their customers for their benefit.
These big banks, for sure. And the thing is that they're so in, they own Congress because mm-hmm. they give so much money to the president of the United States. Obama got a lot of bank money. And Hillary is a bank person. She is the banker. You know, if she gets in there, they got a free rein to do whatever they want, even though, you know, she says other things. but they've already bought her off.
You would think
this is a terrible situation. Where is the racketeering charges? Yep.
And you would think this is would be a rallying cry for Hillary Clinton as she attacked the biotech companies for their practices. You would think this would be something she would come out and say, you know, this is just absolutely disgusting. We're going to get to the bottom of all these excess fees and all this, you know, poor treatment of customers and blah, 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 blah. Right. But no, nothing.
Well, I think even better is the big talker, the blowhard, Elizabeth Warren.
Ah,
she's the one who's the big consumer advocate. Where is she in this deal?
Nope. I have somebody else that should be speaking up that nothing has been heard from. Where is Warren Buffett? He's a major shareholder in Wells Fargo and was considering, of course, as usual, upping his position. Major shareholder.
Yeah, where is Warren? What does he think of this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, darn it, we got caught.
Yeah, I don't know why there's such... And only $185 million, that's nothing to these guys.
The banker should be... Okay, well, I've said it already. I've said it enough.
Yep.
They should be imprisoned, and this Correct. Is the best opportunity to do it. It's racketeering. It's almost the dictionary definition.
Yeah, and especially because you have, of course, cross state lines, right?
And you're going across state lines. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just get them on
what
mail.
Banks always wanted.
Just get them on mail fraud. That's what you could do for everybody. Right?
I'm sure there's some mail fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Could be.
All right.
Well, I was very much this thing really
disturbing.
Irked me.
I know it's very disturbing.
And what's disturbing is the fact that nothing's going on.
Yeah, and then nothing will happen. By the way, just to let me give you the end of the story. Nothing will happen. Just so you know that ahead of time. No, nobody's going to do anything. And then they'll come up with a different scheme that they will keep under the covers for a little while till they're caught. So, online review site Yelp. You know the star rating where the people could say they love it, they hate it, whatever. Well, it seems that. A variety of businesses were complaining and actually sued because of negative reviews. This is just the amazing part of our culture that nobody can say bad things about anybody, no matter how bad something is, right? So anyway, crazy. Anyway, they dismissed the lawsuit against a libel lawsuit against Yelp. So I guess you can kind of go back to the restaurants and put in your rating. A couple other things. HP announced that they'll be acquiring Samsung's printer business. I thought that was a losing proposition.
What printer business?
I never saw a Samsung printer, but they're going to be getting their printer segment for $1 billion. And it's
I believe they make a cheap little laser printer. It's like $99 or something like that. And it's actually a pretty good product.
So
I'm not mistaken.
So what's interesting, they're buying their current printer segment, right? Samsung's printer segment they're buying, which is a currently operational printer. And the reason they're doing this is they said it's a move to disrupt and reinvent the $55 billion copier industry, a segment that hasn't innovated in decades. Newsflash, we're not using copiers anymore. We are scanning things. I'm not sure why we want to reinvent the copier business. Why don't we just reinvent the,
It seems to me, yeah, I know we do scan. A copying machine is a scanner.
Correct. I don't know why they're, I don't know what they have going on here. Maybe they just want the leases or something. I don't know what the deal is. They'll also acquire over 6,500 patents pertaining to Samsung's printing team of one, and it's their printing team of 1,300 researchers and engineers. 1,300 researchers and engineers on their printing team. What the hell are 1,300 people doing all day?
You got me making blocking patents, I guess. I have no idea.
Especially if they're admitting that the segment that hasn't innovated in decades, what the hell are 1,300 people?
Yeah, there's your irony. It hasn't innovated in decades, so let's just take all these researchers over who haven't done anything, apparently, ever. Yeah, that's a good one.
Anyway, let's take a look, a little check on Weight Watchers. We talked about them. We looked at that with astonishment about how the Oprah effect can even affect the stock
Oprah
so dramatically, right?
She's a monster.
Yep. So Oprah comes in and picks up a 10% position in Weight Watchers. The stock goes like haywire to the upside. I think it was like, I don't know, 50, 60, 70%. She makes a nice score. Well, where are we now? Many months later, let's take a look at the chart.
Do we have it in here?
Oh, yeah. Little Oprah. It says a WTW chart, Weight Watchers chart. About three quarters of the way down on the show notes.
Weight Watchers chart. I see the ISM composite chart.
Keep going down.
Oh, down.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. As much as, okay, there it is. Got it.
So she picks up the shares in October of 2015. Shares spike from about $6. They go to $26. And that was quick. Down since then, 84%. Down to $9.51.
That's been a good short.
Yeah. How do you like that?
Oh, well.
I think we tried to short it right around there, but we kicked out.
Well, you get kicked out with that secondary spike.
Yep.
Which is a classic down model. I mean, the thing drops like a rock, then tries to bounce back, doesn't make it.
Yep.
And then drifts down, and then it kind of, yeah, it was a rough chart. Mm-hmm. Rough chart to short.
A couple
just
of
unless
things.
Unless you just short it and let it slide, or because some puts would have been good.
Yep. Oh, yeah, long-term puts. GM has their first long-range battery electric vehicle, ugly as sin.
The Bolt?
Yeah, the Bolt. Ugly. Ugly. But it does seemingly go just a little farther than the Tesla model of its kind. The Model 3 has about a $35,000 sticker or so. You get about a $7,500 tax credit back, I assume. So we'll see if this is actually going to play.
You know, I'm going to give a review of these electric cars. I've tested a bunch of them. I got them from the dealer, from not the dealers but the manufacturers for a week, and I drove a bunch of them around. I haven't obviously driven the Bolt, but I went to dealers and driven other ones, so I'm pretty familiar. These cars, the electric car, is a loser.
Oh, well, don't give it away. You're gonna
read it. No, I'm good. They're losers. And the only car you want, if you're going to buy an electric car, you want to get the Chevy Volt.
Well, that's
about
a hybrid.
The same price as the Bolt. It's not really a hybrid because it's not wired like a hybrid. It's wired like an electric that falls back on the engine for different reasons. It doesn't, like, for example, with the Prius, which is kind of a gutless wonder. I never liked the Prius that much. It's a Toyota, so it's well made. It seems as if when you're using a Prius, if you take it on the freeway, it is using the motor. Now, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong and tell me that I'm completely full of it, but the way my understanding is it uses the motor when you get past a certain speed. It just won't, the electric motor will not take you to 70 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding with the Volt is that the electric motor does everything, and the gasoline engine only kicks in when you've run out of juice. It's not going back and forth.
It's like a generator for charging, you're saying.
Well, it's not really a generator for charging, which would make it like a diesel locomotive, which I think would be a great idea, but they don't make it like that because the motor's not working. I mean, the diesel locomotive is usually charging the electric stuff all the time, and it's a different process. But I think if you look at the wiring scheme and the way they work, I don't think that the Volt, which is why it gets credited for being an electric car by the state of California if you want to go across the bridge for free or at a discount. And you get the electric car sticker.
You get to go over a bridge at a cheaper price than a regular gas car?
In California, absolutely.
That's insane.
And if you're one guy in the car, you can still get into the HOV lane.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
That's crap.
Yeah.
That's discrimination.
Yeah,
That's discrimination.
Yeah. It should be illegal, but this is what they do. So here's the deal. You can get anyone. If you get a pure electric, I mean, if you get a Prius, that's great. If you want to get a Volt, that's great. The Volt is as a so-called electric car, is you don't have this effect of this white-knuckle driving. Until they come up with a way to really measure the usage of the battery and make some calculations so you know how far you're going to go, how far you're going to get with an electric car, pure electric, these things are horrible. You're driving along, and you're going to say, you're supposed to have a range of, let's say, 100 miles, 200, 150 miles. And so you're going someplace, and you get, it's like a 100-mile drive back and forth. And you're going there, and about halfway on the way back, the battery thing says, you only got 10 miles left. You only got 5 miles left. You only have 2 miles left. You got, 20 miles to go. And it makes you crazy because then when you slow down or you do something else, the thing goes up and it goes, oh, now you got 100 miles left. then it drops down. You got 5 miles left. You're going to run out of electricity. And then it goes up again. Goes up and down and up and down. It's horrible experience. It's a horrible experience. Do not buy an electric car.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't hear people say the counter argument is, well, if I only go to the store once in a while. No, that's what happens. One night you're going to forget to charge it. Something happens. And yeah, you only have to go to the store, but the thing looks like it's empty, even though it tells you you got 20 miles left. And then you want to charge it to go something. This is a terrible car.
Well, we learned a lot tonight. We learned about your views on banks and electric cars.
Yeah.
I mean, what else do we need to know? We got to go over to the stocks right now before we run out of time, of course. You can check out all of the information, a live stream of information about the stocks that we talk about, why we talk about them, some of the picks that we have, some of the pans. This is not an offer to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation to buy any security either. If, in fact, you decide to do anything with any of these, you need to seek professional financial advice. We are not taking any responsibility for your loss of your house, your car, your family leaving you, or anything because you lost all your money with something we talked about. Just not doing it. We'll, of course, mention if John C. Dvorak, myself, or Horowitz and Clients own any of these, we will disclose that as well. So there you go. What do we got here? You know, I'm interested. You're looking at this list. So I'm still very interested how, with all this going on and with some of the things that have we recently seen with markets and the concern about the European banks, the Barclays, generally speaking, I mean, still up 23.5%, almost 24%.
I know. It's great.
Really hasn't slid back. And of course, we'd get clipped if we were 10% stop on that. So pretty good. What else we got? Netflix, up 5%. Awesome. You did the insider deal there. The guy was buying hand over fist. I think you went short Biogen. Look at that sucker.
Yeah, that's good. That was worked great. Out.
Shake Shack, up 18% on the short side.
That's your pet peeve stock.
Yeah, I got a few of those. Syncetta Technologies, kind of nowhere. 20th Century Fox, nowhere. Herbalife, up 1.53%, but tomorrow that probably will be, we're short, I'm short that. I said this is a loser. Now, Icon takes the stage tonight, and you know what he says? This guy is unbelievable. Just to let you know, I'm making inquiries to see if it's possible for me to buy up to 50% of the company.
Why?
Because, you know, he's talking his book. He's trying to pump the stock. He's trying to...
Oh, he's trying to get out.
He's trying to... Maybe. He's trying to smack Ackman. Yeah. On his short side.
And, pump and dump.
Yeah, that would be, and that's, if you notice my thesis, Icon is bluffing.
That's, yeah, so you said take two, Icon is bluffing.
Mm-hmm.
Another one of your pet peeve stocks.
Yep. Chipotle is, you're short that, it's a flat. Penske Automotive, what's going on there? Up, it's 8%.
I know it's up, and the thing is, if I did not have it on this list, I would put it on the list this week again because there's more buying going on.
I don't know what's going on there.
It's probably, now that I think about it, the only reason it's going up is because all this buying from the insiders.
Something's up there.
Buy. Let's sell to who?
I would not be surprised if we see in the near future, it doesn't have to be tomorrow, but in the near future, some kind of major news about a merger or some kind of an acquisition or some kind of something going on here.
Consolidation with all these people has been going on for a while, even though we still have a lot of these different companies. But a lot of them are gone. Western Auto, I think, is one of them we used to have, and now it's Kragen, and there's O'Reilly, and there's all these other parts companies, and then there's these bigger ones, these big operations like Penske. I think that's got to be what it is. It's the only thing that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody seems to care about, buying up the competition.
Right. I have one pick for this week. This goes in line with my discussion of bond prices.
Yeah, your rationale.
And yields. So we're shorting.
So this is an ultra short layman. This is a tripler, I think.
It's a double. We're shorting bonds. It's not a really, you could either use TLT, which is the long bond ETF. Which is 20 plus years. You could short that, or we're going to just make it easy. Go after TBT, which is a double.
Which is the short.
Yeah, it's a short, double short. This one has some degradation. It's not the best play, but if in fact we see a decent move on rates higher and maybe they run away, this could be a nice little profit zone.
Well, I'm not seeing it for till next year, but okay, good luck.
Thank you so much. What do you got?
Shorting Wells.
Going down the tubes, huh?
This gonna, well, I hope.
I think there's going to be a lot more fallout here. I do.
Yeah. I think Wells has got to go down. I mean, it's just a miserable operation. It doesn't deserve to exist.
Oh, okay. Let's put that in here.
It doesn't deserve to exist.
So that's the thesis. The thesis.
Yeah.
Not deserving of an existence.
Yes, that's the way I see it.
Perfect.
There's some other things I wanted to look at or have you look at, like, let me see, get this number on this thing. Like, this one here is kind of interesting. It's a closed-end fund that's traded. It's NXR, Nuveen Select Tax-Free Income Portfolio. I just want you to look at the chart.
Okay. I'll bring this up. Nuveen Select Tax-Free Income Portfolio 3.
Yeah, 3.
Okay, let's see here. Chart is, let's take a long look at this here. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It just looks like it is going to go up till the end of time.
And it also, it's just municipals. It also, this is where another yield, what's the yield on this thing? Where is the yield? Do I have a yield here?
No, it's going to have some yield.
5 cents a month. It pays 5 cents a month, which is 50 cents. What is that? Do a quick division here. It's, 60 cents. 0.6 divided by 15.44. It's a 3.8% tax-free yield. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? And I don't think this chart actually, most charts don't. So I don't think this chart did a dividend adjustment. So it should be even higher. If you added the dividends back, the 5 cent, 5 cent, 5 cent.
Yeah, that's what you would do.
So yeah, I mean, unless it was even up today, by the way, when bonds were falling.
Yeah. Well, it's because the numbers, I think, is high enough that it's safe for a while.
I mean, 3.8% tax-free where you can get 0.1 in a savings account, not bad.
Yeah. So let's put that on there.
Really? Okay. This is NXR.
And I'll tell you, the only reason I want to put it on it, because I think it's steady enough that I could keep it on.
Forever.
Right.
So I'm forever.
Remember that one I had on there that one time that was on for almost a year?
Right.
It was just up. It was up. I don't know how much. It was never really went up a lot, but it never went off the list.
Right.
I think this could go to the top, and because the way our little game plays is that the longest riding stock is at the top, and right now it's Barclays.
Right. No, and it doesn't. No, yeah, so right. Exactly. You're exactly right. Huh. I agree.
So I want this to be on. I want to put this in our little grouping so it can rise to the top.
Could be on forever. That's what my thesis is here. Okay, good. All right, I got it. All right, well, of course, you could find all the information about DH Unplugged over on dhunplugged.com. And, of course, you can also listen to John and Adam Curry 2 times a week, Thursdays. I always forget, Thursdays and Sundays. And that's a great show called No Agenda. If you haven't listened to No Agenda, let me tell you something. Buckle up. Sit down and turn on that show. It is,
you know, we won the podcasting award for best news show.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Seriously, it's funny. It's entertaining as hell, by the way. You just got to also listen to what Adam actually does with the various sound effects, carts or the clips.
I call him a one-man band.
It's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. Yeah. So
he even has a foot switch as a cough switch.
Does he really?
Yeah. He taps it with his foot. Even though you hear him cough every so often, but he's... has a little nagging coffee once in a while. He bangs it with his foot. So he's got like three arms and a foot all in action.
It's unbelievable. So you have to listen to that. Yeah. No Agenda. You can go over to, I think it's noagendastream.com, I believe.
Noagendashow.com.
Not noagendashow.com.
Unless, if you want to listen live, you go to noagendastream.com.
And they got, if you're a techie, he's got all sorts of ways to listen and with I don't even know how, it's all these fancy ways to listen to the show and download it and all sorts of things. And if nothing else,
some torrent stuff and some other, we have a lot of variety, and this is a lot of people put stuff up for us. some guy, Adam was talking about it in the last show, has put up a site. I don't have a URL handy, but it is a super hyper compressed version of the show. It comes in a like very small file size for people that are out in Africa that really can't afford to download a 150 megabyte show. That's nice. 3 hours.
That's nice.
Yeah, I thought so.
And by the way, next year's podcast award, I'm already voting, by the way. Best album art for the show.
If they had that category, we should win.
You'd win that. It's always very humorous. Very humorous.
Yeah. We have album art for each individual show, 100 pieces a year.
Mm, unbelievable. All right, so you can listen to that and follow John on The Real Dvorak at Twitter. And myself, Andrew Horowitz. Listen to The Disciplined Investor as well. This is comes out on Sundays. We have guests on from all sorts of areas. I'm talking options, talking markets, talking futures and commodities last week. And last week's show actually was pretty good we put on there. But anyway, you can listen to all that and see everything else on DH Unplugged. So that's my spiel.
It's good.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.